Zurich Jazz Talks, die Podcast-Serie des Zurich Jazz Orchestra. Heute mit Joseph Bowie. Joseph Bowie kommt aus St. Louis und hat 1978 in New York die Jazz-Funk-Band Defunct gegründet. Die Band besteht bis heute, auch wenn sie sich immer wieder in Form und Größe verändert hat. Der Posaunist und Sänger Bowie, der seit 20 Jahren in Holland lebt, hat ein Herz für alle Arten von Jazz, so auch für richtig große Orchester. Das Interview führt Susanne Loacker, für den Podcast zuständig ist Pablo Facinetto, die Leitung hat Bettina Ullmann.
I think this is one of my first podcast sessions. Yeah. Okay. I've heard about podcasts. I think I've done some online, but never a sit-down podcast.
Ed Joe, welcome to Zurich. So good to have you. Thank you. This is the first for you here with the Zurich Jazz Orchestra, at least in that podcast. You're talking to a jazz crowd now, basically. If you had 30 seconds to explain what funk is, what would you tell them?
Well, I would say funk is jazz. It's the same thing they've been dancing to for the last 50 years. So, I mean, what is jazz? It's all, what is gospel? It's just music. It's good music. And like Duke Ellington says, there's only two types of music, good and bad. How it's done.
So we're really glad to have you playing good music for us. You guys go back quite a long way. What do you remember of your first meeting with Joe Ed?
Well, I mean, the first time we did something together was 2011, right, in Lucerne, at the university, so also here in Switzerland, right?
Absolutely.
But for me, my awareness of Joe goes way, way back. I mean, that's where I'm gonna just divert just slightly, because, here, I even have a prop, because in the 1980s, when I was a student, you know, I was studying, I was a young trombone player. And when this album came out, me and my friends, you know, all my studio colleagues, you know, all of us young trombone players, you have to remember, you know, the trombone historically seen in the world of jazz, like in the 30s and 40s and 50s, it was a pretty cool instrument.
Right.
But what happened was, you know, at some point in time, saxophone and then like guitar, those instruments became a little more cool. And by the time we got to the 80s, When I was coming up, the trombone, it wasn't that cool.
There's not many trombone, hardly any trombone front men.
Exactly. And when this album came out and when Defunct, when you guys came on the scene, for us young trombone players, this was all of a sudden like some really important shit. And I don't think, you know, you probably weren't aware of it at the time. But for, you know, for young people, for all those of us, it was like, man, a cool band. So they're playing great music. So funk, groove-oriented music. The front man is a singer who also plays the trombone. And so it was like, it was just this revelation for us. And it was a big inspiration for a lot of us.
Wow, that's great.
And then when I found out personally, also your family heritage,
right?
Because I was aware of your brother Lester before I was aware of you. So Lester Bowie, and coming up in Chicago, I was a big fan of the Brass Fantasy,
right.
and that's like, oh my God, that's Lester's brother. And so it was like, it was this whole sort of thing that clicked. So, you know, so I've been aware of you and your music and Defunct since, you know, since back then.
Wow.
So that's why for me, this is also very, you know, it's a personal thing to actually get to work with you now and that we've been able to work together for years.
I'm really glad to hear that.
That's, you know, so yeah.
Fantastic, Ed. I mean, my goodness, you're making me old.
You're just a little, you're not that much older,
no,
but you
know
you were already. You know, so yeah, so and the thing is also then what I think, because I, you know, I do a lot of teaching,
right.
And you do as well, but the fact that, you know, a lot of times in at the universities and stuff, When we're teaching them, of course, the students jazz and stuff. But it's great to have somebody come in and also teach them this tradition, because this is definitely something that a lot of young people...
They don't have it.
Right.
They don't get it. The real soul funky tradition, soul jazz tradition, because they don't know anything about playing in the Chitlin' Circuit. See, I came up playing in the Chitlin' Circuit. Ran Greyhound buses around the South in the U.S. with artists like Johnny Taylor, Tyrone Davis, and where everybody, it was dangerous. Everybody had a pistol. Right. And we go on a, you go on a truck stop back in those days, like in the early 70s. I mean, well, you know how racist America was in those days, especially in the South. And so, I mean, but that's why I wanted to become a singer.
Okay.
Because I came to New York playing free jazz mostly. Mm-hmm. And but then during the new wave period, the so-called, well, Blondie, James White, I said, I got a job with James White, James Chance. And I said, wait a minute, I mean, I need to start singing because singers, well, they make more money.
That is a pretty good reason.
Yeah.
When Ed talked about you, he called your album a revelation. When I hear him talking, it's a bit of a revolution as well, because, as you said, a singer and a trombone player fronting a band. Were you aware of that at the time? Did you actually plan like a revolution, or was it just the way it turned out to be?
Well, I always had the attitude. I knew I was a front man. I mean, basically, like, people say, well, what do you do? I say, well, I'm not really a super musician, but I am an energy. I'm a spark plug. So, meaning that I can bring a band together, and I can make them get a sound that we're all after. But it's an old tradition, especially with black musicians in America, or any musician, actually. It's just about, creating that vibe, not just, okay, a lot of people can play music and play notes, but it's an art to learn how to, you know, control the audience, to reach the audience, to reach people. It's more than being a musician. You have to kind of be like an humanitarian, or you have to be in touch with yourself so you can touch something in your audience.
You say you create a vibe. Your band over the years has taken on all forms and shapes and sizes. What different is it playing with like a large orchestra?
What is a dream? I mean, 20 years ago, the first, we started the Defunct Big Band, 1998 was the first show in New York City at the Knitting Factory. And then we went on a European tour in 2000. Because the Big Band for me was my pension, my retirement plan. I want to retire because I can stay one place 3 or 4 days instead of one night.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm too old for the one-nighters. It's a little bit too much strenuous for physically. But I've always wanted to be, you know, a funky Frank Sinatra.
Really? Okay.
With that type.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A big band from it, Jerry Lewis, well, Dean Martin, any one of those guys. Just some, because it's visual, it's a show. I like the fact that the artists look good because you're trying to reach those emotions. What the people, you know, what people pay their money to see. They don't want to see somebody off the street. They want to see something special, an illusion, a fantasy. And that's what show business is to me. I mean, so, and I never wanted to be just a trombone player or just, I want to be a showman because it's a lot more fun. Well, it's a lot more work too, but.
You mean, I do think we're onto something here. Have you ever thought of it, of offering Joe a retirement spot as singer in residence for the Zurich Jazz Orchestra?
Huh, well, maybe we'll have to think about that.
Hey, well, that sounds okay to me, you know. That would be interesting. But this is the type of thing I like to do. And but since we started the big band thing, there's little elements. I mean, Ed is such a amazing musician, arranger. But I think I have something to bring to come together with him that completes the formula for the musicians, where they have some exposure to some old school tradition and some things. I mean, a lot of people don't even understand what the James Brown breakdown is. See, a lot of young musicians don't break down on the one. These are the things I can bring to them, and also how to hone your energy.
Yeah.
And use that energy the whole night, not just peter out. It's got to keep pumping till the end.
Yeah. Well, but it's not even young musicians. It's just a lot of jazz musicians. Even, you know, very experienced, really great jazz musicians are not used to performing, especially
right.
with this focus energy.
Right.
And I mean, I won't say where and when, but we were doing a show with another big band, and we did the first set, and the energy was incredible. It was really kicking, bam, bam, bam. But the problem is some of the musicians from the big band, they came up to me in the break, and they said, hey, can you please ask Joe to slow the pace down? And maybe because they, you know, they weren't used to being playing so intently, exactly like that.
Which all
it,
night.
Exactly, it was like that. And it was for the audience, it was great. It was great. Right. But so we had to sort of chill it out. And you had to talk more.
I said, is that okay, trumpet players?
because once again, they're not used to this energy, you know, and or what you're talking about. How many well-trained, conservatory-trained jazz musicians know about, you know, James Brown and right. this sort of stuff, or Muddy Waters?
Or do they know about playing a 2 or 3 hour set?
Yeah.
You see, I came up playing 2-3 hour sets.
Yeah.
So it's a physical thing that they don't understand. A lot of musicians have never learned, never had the training to last physically. And so, like you said, they... Can you tell Joe to slow it down a little bit?
Yeah, of course, and you know, and yeah, it's and it is something that it's sort of gone missing. You know, it's sort of it's not part. And yeah, I mean, also something that was a part of my experience when I growing up, playing dance gigs for 4 hours, or you know, these long, really, really strenuous gigs. Exactly, you know, or even longer, starting at 8 p.m. playing until 2 a.m. or 4 a.m.
Right,
you know, stuff like that.
But that's. That's what gives you the chops. But like what Ed is saying, this is something that a lot of musicians have missed.
Mm-hmm. Which in one way is good, that maybe musicians these days don't have to go through the trials and tribulations we went through. But it's also part of paying your dues
right.
as a musician. And, you know, that's the
Absolutely.
Same thing. Yeah, you know, a lot of the young generation, maybe they didn't have that. And it does... It takes away something from the music.
It takes away something. They don't understand the intensity. I told, maybe I shouldn't say this.
No names.
But I told a drummer one night, I said, he said, you know, this is rehearsal. I'll get stronger at the gig. I said, wait a minute. You got to play every rehearsal just like you play the gig, with the same intensity, or else how are you going to be in shape for the gig?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't train playing a rehearsal like easy. I play the rehearsal just like that. You play it just like you want to play the gig. You train. I mean, an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You don't take it easy at training. That's when you have to develop the stamina.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
The stamina, right.
Yes. We're also, I mean, it's, you know, it's like we're living in also the generation or the time we're living in.
Right.
Band leaders are more forgiving. I mean, I don't know how you're.
Well, you know, I'm not forgiving.
No, you're not. But when I was coming up,
right.
I worked with band leaders. If somebody was in the first rehearsal, if they weren't playing 100%,
right.
they get fired.
You're fired.
You know, in a rehearsal. And here you could never, you know, these in the year 2023, you could never do that. Because everyone's so, you know, I mean, things are. I don't want to say they're coddled in their, you know, but in the
well,
things
maybe.
Are better, maybe. But
what does it do for the music?
Exactly. Yep.
It takes the level of performance down because it's too much slack.
Yeah.
I mean, the trumpet player, you come to me talking about, well, I'm tired. Go home.
That's another way of firing somebody.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like the old rhythm and blues artists like James Brown or Tyrone. I mean, you start playing some bad notes and make a mistake, you just turn around and say, okay, $100, $50 for your mistake. But that teaches you to be a little more serious about it. Yeah.
One piece of advice for upcoming young jazz musicians from you.
Well, be true to yourself. You see, I mean, it's one thing to learn how to play notes, but find out who you are, because expressing your personality is really what a musician is all about. Being able to convey your personality to the audience and convincing them. But in order to do that, you have to be confident and secure with yourself. Is that for me? That's what advice I would give them. Be true, be true, be true, be you.
Hey, perfect. Thanks so much. We do appreciate you being here. Thanks for taking the time. Looking forward to the gig. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
And I think you have an album to sign there for somebody.
Okay, that's a signer.
Do we have a like an editing or something upstairs? We'll get one.